The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
And we are back. Second hour is live. We still have a few weeks to go before the football season. But a story today in the New York Times gave all of us a reminder to how difficult and cruel this game has been over many, many years. The headline in the New York Times, they made history at Alabama, but football stardom had a price. Four fixtures of Alabama, including a former coach who replaced Paul Bryant, had to deal with CTE, and just an extraordinary piece by Alan Blinder, who covers sports these days, formerly a news side reporter. He has been in Scotland recently covering the British Open. He's covered the LIV Tour. He's been to media days, and he joins us now. Alan, you've been busy. We appreciate your time. It's always great to check in with you.
Hey, thanks for having me, Paul.
Alan, let's start from the beginning in relation to the story today. How did you find out about this? And obviously, several of the families were cooperative in helping tell what is an absolutely chilling story.
Yeah, I mean, we got wind some months ago that, you know, Ray Perkins had died in December of 2020, and that his family had decided to donate his brain to a group of researchers in Massachusetts who specialize in CTE. And the results came back in recent months, and they wanted to come forward with them. One of Perkins's daughters, Rachel, actually works for a group called the Concussion Legacy Foundation, which she became involved in after her father, after he deteriorated after his death. And the family wanted to come forward and speak in the Times because they were hoping to encourage other people who had played football to donate their brains to researchers after their death. Because CTE, while we know a lot more about it than we used to, it's a disease that cannot be diagnosed until after someone dies. So it's not just a function of, you know, getting an MRI or a CT scan or some blood work. The only way that researchers can sort out whether someone had the disease or not is to study their actual brain after death. So the family wanted to come forward to encourage other people to donate their brains.
And in the piece, there's a picture of this team from Coach Bryant, and you five different players, and they're all well known in Alabama circles. In addition to Coach Perkins, Ken Stabler, Dennis Holman, who was a fabulous receiver, Steve Bellman, and Paul Crane. And now three of those, if I understand correctly, Alan, have been confirmed CTE?
Yeah, I mean, Stabler, we've known for a couple years, had CTE. That was confirmed after his death several years ago. Ray Perkins, the brain examination results came back recently, and they showed CTE. Same thing with Paul Crane, who actually died just before Ray Perkins did in 2020. Steve Bowman had talked about how he thought he had CTE. His brain has not been studied as a part of this this project up in Massachusetts. And Dennis Holman's family believes he has CTE given his symptoms, and they intend to donate his brain once he dies.
And the family members in your piece were very clear. I mean, these are prominent families connected to Alabama history. I mean, you can't get any more prominent than being the family of the former head coach. But I'll let you tell the story. But it didn't seem like as disappointing and tragic as all this is. Nobody's playing the blame game, are they?
No. I mean, what we are seeing is that these are our men who came to play in Tuscaloosa, you know, 60 years ago, at a time before CTE was as well understood as it is now. No one is, you know, playing the blame game at the college level of saying that, you know, Alabama knew something, should have done more, anything like that. In fact, these families have been pretty emphatic that they still revere football. They'd like to see some changes to the sport. They'd like to see changes, especially to how it's coached and played with children. But they are quite emphatic that they still revere the game. They love the game. I mean, the Perkins family, you know, still goes to plenty of games in Tuscaloosa, and Dennis Homan, his grandson's a long snapper at Alabama. I mean, these are not families putting great distance between themselves and the sport. In fact, a lot of them say the sport is the reason their lives have been as extraordinary as they've been. I mean, you know, Ray Perkins basically rose out of poverty in Mississippi, came to play in Tuscaloosa because he wanted to play for Bear Bryant, and he goes on to an extraordinary career as a player and then as a coach. And he coached at Alabama. He coached, you know, the New York Giants and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He had an extraordinary life, and his family traces it back to football. And, you know, they are, of course, deeply disturbed by the findings from this group in Boston, but they wanted to make them known and to advance research and encourage conversations like the one we're having now.
Alan Blinder with us, covers college sports, among other things, for the New York Times. Alan, I want to deviate from your piece today for just a second, because you've had a unique perch in college athletics, being able to interview leaders such as Mark Emmert, others who have been involved, as former Secretary Gates, with the overhaul of the current model. But one story that really stood out that I wanted to ask you about is, I think you did the first major interview with Kevin Warren as he was ascending to the Big Ten commissionership. And he has been so much at the epicenter of conflict and controversy, starting with COVID. And now he is perhaps days away from the biggest television conference deal in the sport's history. I'm particularly curious your impressions of him and what he has accomplished, because that first Times article really seemed to set the tone and maybe drew a lot of animus from others around the sport.
Well, I remember he and I had this conversation. It was not long after he became commissioner, but it was before he and the Big Ten made the decision at first to postpone the football season or not play football back in 2020. And in that conversation, we were just talking about what it was like essentially to be the first black man to be a commissioner in the Power Five. We were talking about, you know, his background and how on earth he wound up in college sports, because he's not, you know, a college sports lifer, if you will. He came out of a couple decades of working in the NFL. He's a lawyer by training, and I found him to be thoughtful and engaged and interesting back then. And I think that no one was really sure when he and I first talked of what would come of that football season. I mean, he wasn't sure. Sankey wasn't sure. No one was entirely certain how this was all going to go. You know, I think that he has had quite a challenging couple years, as you alluded to. But I think that, you know, there's a sense out there that a new TV deal could do a lot to reshape perceptions of him, because he went through a lot of grief after the decision to postpone the season and revive the season. You know, he found the Big Ten getting dragged into presidential politics with Donald Trump trying to claim credit for it. It just, you know, it was kind of the whole country's been in a vortex the last few years, and it seems like Warren was in a particularly dire one, just given the chaos all around them.
And I mentioned Alan's piece on Kevin Warren. I will also mention the piece you did on Greg Sankey, which appeared right around the beginning of the college football playoff. I mean, it was an epic Sunday piece for the New York Times. And certainly it's someone you knew maybe a little bit better than Kevin Warren. But I don't know, because there were so many things happening at that moment in time with the playoffs, I don't think we ever got a chance to talk about it. But I was curious, and I think I am curious still, about your reporting on that story and just your impressions of the commissioner of the Southeastern Conference, Greg Sankey.
I mean, we wrote in the story that Sankey is known for being really strategic in his thinking. And, you know, we conducted a couple dozen interviews for that story with people from around the SEC, from around the country, who have known Sankey, you know, back since he was working as a compliance officer and golf coach at Northwestern State in Louisiana. And the consistent picture we heard of him was someone who doesn't say more than he needs to say. He's a long-term thinker. He's known for getting into the details. At the same time, you know, I remember talking to one executive about him, and the most detailed interaction they remembered was about how, like, he was an apostle for a certain brand of legal pads. And that kind of told me all I needed to know about him, was that, you know, he sweats the small stuff, but he's also not known for, you know, big-time theatrics and meetings or anything like that. Just known as an operator. And, you know, look, he played college sports a little bit himself. He was a pitcher. Baseball player over in Texas. You know, he understands the system. He grew up in the system. So he's a little, he's unlike Warren in that way. He really came up through the ranks of college sports. So you've got now an SEC commissioner who is steeped in, you know, NCAA policies and procedures and history, and a Big Ten commissioner who is, for all intents and purposes, the new guy on the block, or at least one of the new guys.
And what I find so interesting about these two, and they're at the epicenter of the sport, and there's this titanic battle, at least among some of us, watching for supremacy. And of course, Kevin Warren, as you pointed out, was a protege of the man who handed the gavel to Greg Sankey, Mike Slive.
Yeah, I mean, when Kevin Warren was a young lawyer, he worked with Slive quite closely. He still considers him a mentor. So, you know, in a lot of ways, the Slive legacy still looms over college sports. I mean, you know, Sankey was hired at the SEC by Mike Slive. He was brought in to help clean up the SEC because he had this reputation as kind of a no-nonsense compliance rules guy. And Warren trained, if you will, under Slive. So in a lot of ways, Mike Slive is still having enormous influence over college sports all these years later.
We could talk about so many things, and we'll continue this another time. But Alan Blinder, make less or minimize the importance of your piece on the four Alabama players, but I did want to get your thoughts on some other very important issues. It's always great to have you on. Be well. Talk to you soon.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Alan Blinder, one of the best out there from the New York Times. His piece on Alabama and the four players is really it's both fascinating and troubling all the same. We'll take a short break. We're coming right back.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free, no insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Paul. That's hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And one story that we are trying to get to the bottom of, and it's been difficult, has been the story out in Oklahoma with Coach Gundy's resignation. Very little was known on first glance, but we're starting to get a better understanding of it. Venables put out a statement saying, as painful as it's been dealing with Coach Gundy resigning from the program, it doesn't touch the experience of pain felt by a room full of young men, and I am charged to protect, lead, and love. Coach Gundy resigned from the program because he knows what he did was wrong. They never tell us exactly what he did, except to say he chose to read aloud to his players, not once, but multiple times. Here it is. A racially charged word that is objectionable to everyone and does not reflect the attitude and values of our university, our football program. This is not acceptable, period. Coach Gundy did the right thing in resigning. There doesn't seem to be much doubt here that this was not a resignation. I know I'm going off script here, that he was pushed out. He clearly interrupted a player who had some racial pejorative on his iPad. Where that emanated from, whether it was from something personal or a song lyric, whatever, and Gundy chose to read it out loud. The fact that he did it multiple times, which was stressed, this is a second statement. Remember, last night there were a bunch of statements that left a lot of people confused, but there seems to be less confusion. I don't understand, this is just an opinion here, why universities aren't more forthcoming. We're all adults. If somebody gets fired, explain exactly why. Deal with this in specificity. Don't hide behind words like shameful. Just spit it out. And I think it would help us all understand better what went down here. But it's pretty obvious that story is done for now. Let's check in with more fans and more callers, I should say. I don't know about fans. Tim is up next in Austin. Hello, Tim.
Paul, thank you for taking my call. Hey, I just wanted to say we have a new station here in Austin, Texas, 102.7. And after watching you for years on TV, I finally get to listen to you on the radio, and I just feel blessed.
Well, that is fantastic. I was unaware of that. I'm delighted. I mean, we are our radio distribution is on many different levels. There's the national distribution, the satellite distribution, and then obviously many great affiliates around the country. So I am particularly glad to hear that.
Yes, sir. I've spoken with you a couple of times over the last decade or so, and I want you to know that even though I live here in Austin, Texas, I wasn't the one who gave the number one vote to the Longhorns, just well, to clarify.
Yeah. We think that was Kirk Bowles, don't you?
It could be, but it could have been Bevo, too. You just never know.
Yeah, Bevo, Sid Golden, or Kirk. Hey, anyway, Tim, it's great to have you on, and we're delighted that you can hear us. Dakota is up next. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How you doing, Paul?
Hey there. Good afternoon to you. Thank you.
Well, I wanted to just get a little bit into Auburn's football schedule, kind of for the next five home games that kind of come out this season. I know we're going to start off, and there's a lot of talk here on campus with the students, just how big that is to kind of come in and play those first five at home. How do you see that kind of playing out with those first five ones? And then let's say that they do go 5-0. Maybe go in to Georgia, maybe drop that game. And then you got, kind of the back half of the schedule and how that output could be if they do start off that hot 5-0.
Well, Dakota, I think it's reasonable that Auburn could start out 5-0, and it all really lies with the Penn State game. And, should Auburn pull that off, that would be wins over Mercer, San Jose State, Penn State, Missouri, and LSU at home, then that Georgia game becomes gargantuan. By the way, that game is on the same day as the Alabama A&M game. What if it wasn't the biggest game?
Yeah, no,
day? That would be hilarious.
Yeah, absolutely. Those could both be.
And then
games.
And then Ole Miss, State, A&M. I mean, it's hard to. Right at that point, you really, could you'd have to start asking the question: is this one of the surprise teams in the country? Is all the stuff about Harsin, did that inspire? I mean, there are a million scenarios, but that would certainly I don't think it's essential that he starts off 5-0, but I think considering how difficult the second half is, starting really with the last game of the first half, he better not drop too many early on, or it's going to be a problematic situation.
Yeah, absolutely. I do love the fact that you get a bye week before Arkansas really regroup with that. Not only do I don't think Arkansas is going to be that great, but I think if you win that game, you have momentum into A&M and Mississippi State kind of in the later half, where maybe you flip some heads there and you win two out of the three or two out of four kind of towards the end. And then maybe you go into Bama with eight or nine wins to kind of solidify a huge game.
But, Dakota, Auburn has had a propensity to do this over its history. Going back to the 90s with the perfect season in 93, that was not expected to be a good year. It turned out to be a perfect season.
2004.
Yeah, the four season, nobody was expecting much. And obviously, Gus Malzahn's first year, I remember being on the set of game day on week one, and I said, I think they could go 7-5 or 8-4. And Kirk Herbstreit laughed me off the set. And they played for the national championship 5 months later.
Well, I'm sure you know a little bit better than him, but
I really don't.
Auburn, yeah. Well, if you are in Auburn, feel free to pull up to the Theta Chi house here. We'd love to have you, and more Eagle.
Thank you very much, Dakota. And I think there's a reasonable chance we will be there early in the season. And you guys want to go to the house with me?
Sure.
Nothing like spending. Which house was that again? The Theta? Theta Chi. Yeah, we're all over the Theta Chi. Am I getting myself into something I shouldn't be? Should I not be going to the Theta Chi house?
No.
I'm going. I don't care what anybody says. Let's check out with Josh in Pensacola. Hey, Josh.
What's going on, Paul?
Hey, good afternoon.
Hey, man. From Birmingham, just moved to Pensacola, man. Just let you know, I grew up reading the Birmingham News with you all the time.
Well, thank you.
Played ball with Brody Kroll, lived up, grew up at John Kroll's Big Oak Ranch.
Oh, my goodness.
Shout out to those guys. They're a great place up there. But wanted to talk a little bit about Jalen Milroe.
Sure.
I mean, you know, I think he's got an outstanding upside. I know hopefully he'll get some mop-up duties early. But this guy, I hope we don't lose him in the portal. I think he's really can run with it, can throw. What do you think, Paul?
Yeah, I mean, everything I hear about him is good. Now, Josh, let me ask you a question. You grew up at the ranch?
I sure did. I played with Reagan, played in Alabama, and I was a basketball player there. Played baseball with Brody there.
Well, I got to tell
really
you, let me tell you a quick story, Josh. I'm sure you know John. John Curl invited a couple of us up to the ranch one day. This was about 25 years ago. And we were my wife was with me and a couple of friends. We were obviously very close to John and wanted to spend some time up there. So we got on a bunch of horses, and I can't remember what part of the ranch the horses are. And let me assure you, my experience riding horses was nil. So we all start galloping, and my horse gets away from the pack. And I don't know where there's a highway near at some point. And my horse started running toward the highway. Uh-oh. And I thought the guy, I mean, what would you do, Randy, if your horse is heading toward a highway?
You jump.
I jumped. we were within about 100 yards. I just took a perfect jump. And by the way, it was nearly perfect. Could have killed myself, but it was nearly. I landed perfectly on a gravel road. And my ankle gave out, and of course it smashed my head into the gravel, and there was blood all over me.
Nice.
But it was, I mean, again, when you consider what can happen jumping off a horse, so all of a sudden the group comes back, and John Correll, who's this amazing guy, he says, "You got to get back on that horse." I said, "John, I got blood all over me. I couldn't even see. The blood was in my..." I said, "I'm not getting back on that horse." He said, "Well, you'll never ride again if you don't." I said, "Well, that's quite all right."
I'm good with this.
But my question to the audience and to you, Randy, is this. The horse that was trying to get away, where do you think the horse was?
Back at the stable.
The horse was standing right by me.
Oh, just standing there.
I mean, the horse, as soon as I jumped off, the horse stopped.
He didn't want you on
me. Which made me look like a complete fool. Turned out I did have a concussion. I mean, they x-ray. I mean, I was like, I said, hey, John, I really was hurt. I have been on a horse since. But that horse really ticked me off. Why couldn't the horse just kept going?
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Great to have all you here. Calvin is in New Jersey. Calvin. Hey, Calvin.
Hello. Yes.
Hey.
Hello.
Good afternoon.
Hey, Paul. All right. Great fan of you, man. I appreciate your unbiased perspective. But I wanted to ask you a question.
Thank you.
And I'm an Alabama fan. I root for Alabama every year. But I just recently found out that he never hires any black high position coaches, such as offensive coordinator or defensive coordinator. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, this is always something. I remember having a conversation about 2 years ago with Sylvester Croom, who broke the color barrier in the SEC back in 2004. And he made that similar point, not specifically toward Alabama, but he said, coordinator, you have to be a coordinator before you can be a head coach. That is normally the case. I am thinking through my head here on Alabama, and I know his two coordinators, I'm thinking through it as you speak, and I can't come up with one, but that, I mean, I'm at a loss because I think your statement is correct.
Wow.
Now wow. As soon as I say that, I ask you this. I'm not talking about assistant head coaches because that is a different position than offensive or defensive coordinator. But I'd have to go back and check year by year. But off the top of my head at Alabama, I don't think I can give you an answer in the affirmative.
Okay. All right. When I found that out, I was like disturbed a little bit because you don't get any black talented players. I mean, I know he has white and black, but
sure.
Not to have black coaches.
But Calvin, it brings up a question, and I'm sure somebody out there is, coming up with their own response. But when you look at somebody like Nick Saban, how do you differentiate when you're trying to make a value judgment? Because I would say about Saban, I think his record on race is exemplary. Now, could you find fault with a lot of people? Yeah, sure you can. But should you, I think, is the question.
Yeah, well, I don't look for fault. Like I said, Alabama is my college team.
Right.
But I was just when I heard.
Well, hold on a second. I just thought of something. I think I have an exception. I believe Mike Locksley. Was Locksley his offensive coordinator? I'm trying to remember. He may have been a couple of years ago. I'll have to double check Locksley's actual position. But I believe Locksley was the offensive coordinator. And not only that, and I'm not shilling here for Saban, but I remember talking to Mike Locksley a couple of years ago, And he told me that he was at Maryland at the time, and I believe he's the president of the Black Coaches Association. And he had just pointed, he had told me that day that Nick Saban had agreed to be on his board. So I don't think it's a fair statement. So there is one in a couple of years ago, Locksley, who is now the Maryland head coach. So I hope that clears up at least that issue.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, certainly it helps, and I certainly appreciate that. Appreciate your, you know, your insight and everything. But, you know, usually when you're in those positions, but let me ask you this question.
But hold on. I'm thinking of another one. I'm trying to remember whether he was he wasn't the coordinator, or was he the coordinator? Mel Tucker. No, I don't think Mel Tucker was on Coach Saban's staff, but I believe Kirby Smart was the coordinator at the time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I will tell you this, and you know, you can, and we all have, you know, we all can find fault with Nick Saban. I would say that would be one area of Nick Saban's career. You would have to look under many, many rocks to find fault with his hiring of black coaches, though. I think he has led the industry, maybe not as many coordinators as some would like, but I think he's been he has created a lot of opportunities for coaches. I just mentioned two. And there are many more who have become head coaches, including the man who replaced him, I believe, at Michigan State.
Oh, wow. Mm. Well, Paul, I certainly appreciate it. It makes me feel a whole lot better about Nick because I'm a Nick Saban fan. I'm an Alabama fan, you know, so I certainly appreciate that.
Okay, I've got two grandsons. And let me also say to you, this is not an area that you're going to find someone like me making up stuff just to defend Nick Saban. He doesn't need it,
right.
But I do really believe. I'll tell you another story about Nick Saban, Calvin, that doesn't mean much today, but I know this for a fact. When he was at LSU, he brought in Reverend Jesse Jackson to speak to his team. And it did not go over very well with some people in Baton Rouge. I mean, Jesse Jackson was a very vocal civil rights leader. He ran for president in the 80s and remained at the vortex of the civil rights movement for most of his career. He got his start as a lieutenant for Martin Luther King. I believe that he was on the balcony at the Lorraine Motel on April 4th, 1968, when Dr. King was assassinated. That's how important he was in the civil rights movement. I believe I had a conversation privately with Saban about this one time, and he told me I'm not casting aspersions toward Baton Rouge 25 years ago or whenever it was, but it was not a popular thing, and he didn't care. He felt like it was important for his team at that point in time, and this would have been about 2001 or two, to bring Reverend Jackson mm-hmm. down there to speak to his players.
Okay.
It was 20 years ago.
All right. Well, Paul, I appreciate your perspective on this because I know you've been unbiased. You speak the truth, and so it makes me feel a little bit better about Nick. So
Calvin,
there
are some coaches I don't think I could make the same statements about, but I would gladly defend Coach Saban on that front. Hey, thank you for the call. You gave us an opportunity to think a little bit as opposed to just react, and my first impressions were not correct, and I'm glad we got that rectified. We will take a break. More to come right after this.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And we are back. Calm, quiet Monday afternoon. Who better to go to than Daryl?
Oh. So Nick Saban was going to jump ship in 2013 and go to ESPN, huh?
Nobody ever
Let me ask
said
you
that.
This.
Nobody said
well,
that.
What was the motivation behind that, and what was the determining factor for him deciding not to do it? Because he had to be serious. You know, considering it to
You, you obviously heard the story. We'll have the author of that story on tomorrow, so we can let him explain. But He did not. He was not serious. He just simply met with an agent and then had a subsequent conversation while he was working for ESPN.
Okay. I've always considered him to be an average, and you know, it does an okay job, I guess, on ESPN when I've heard him, but nothing spectacular. Like Matt Stiscombe the other day. I mean, he was awesome. I mean, I like that guy. I mean,
Matt's
I know
smart.
He played at Georgia, but
Matt's
I think
smart,
he does
Matt,
a really
Matt is
good
one of the
job.
Smartest analysts I know.
Yeah, smart guy too. Hey, Paul, I got a question for you. Is there a rule in the SEC? Okay, I was told there's an SEC rule that does not allow recruits for schools to entertain recruits at neutral sites. Is that true?
I believe that is correct, yes.
Why would that rule be in place? Why would it matter?
Well, because the rule is in place that you can only entertain at home games. Well, while they're on your campus.
Oh, okay,
it's a campus rule.
I just don't understand why a neutral site would matter. I mean, but I'm glad the rule is in place, because that just means we're going to end up eventually, we're going to move the Georgia game, the Georgia-Florida game to Athens, and the game's the way it should be. But somebody told me that and said it was an SEC rule. I'd never heard of it before. I was like, wow. Hey,
well, by the way, Daryl, I answered too quickly, like I've done too many times. I don't know what it's a rule, whether it's an SEC rule or NCAA rule, we can find out.
I got you. Okay, well, what are they going to do with Texas and Oklahoma? Don't they play at a neutral site when they come to the SEC every year?
They sure do. I think that would change the rule. I agree with you.
Well, I mean, I don't want to change the rule if we're going to keep the game in Jacksonville. Leave the rule like it is. And let Florida, you know, they come to Athens and play.
Well, you know, here's the deal, Daryl. If Florida thinks the game's so important in Jacksonville, let them play the game in Jacksonville.
Every other year. I think play it. Huh?
Yeah, they could have. I mean, that's their game. They could every other year they can play the game wherever they want.
Oh, absolutely. That's there you go. Yep, absolutely. Hey, I saw what Kirby said. You know, talking about our defense, and we got a lot of players that we got to replace on defense, but. You know, we got young players. We got a lot of that's got a lot of.
Sure, I mean, Daryl, don't you think this is a rebuilding year for Georgia?
You know what, Paul? But we're not going to make excuses. Okay, we're not going to cry and complain about our wide receivers being out and they did come up with some rebuilding excuse. We're going to take our butt whooping like a man, like we did in the SEC title game. But I got news for those Alabama fans. Okay, if that same Georgia defense would have showed up for the SEC title game, they showed up for the national title game, it wouldn't have mattered if Julio Jones was on the field. It would not have mattered.
Did that same Georgia defense miss the bus? I mean, were they not there? I thought I saw most of those players there.
Well, Paul, I mean, sometimes you just don't break your bet. You know, I mean, hey, I don't know why it's like that in football, but it was obvious. I mean, you saw the pressure that they were able to get on Young in the national title game. They were unable to get that pressure on Young, gave him all day to throw the ball in the SEC title game.
Well,
and Alabama had the same offensive lineman out there.
Two wide receivers out. Everyone knows the story, Daryl. Thanks for the call. Weave is in Philly. Hey, good afternoon. Weave, are you there?
Hello? Me?
Yeah, that would be you. If your name is Weave.
How you doing, man?
Hey!
Mr. Weave, I'm only out in I'm in Philly, right?
I hear you. I hope so.
Usually on WIP, the sports radio.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, and all my buddies, Tom Kelly, Tony Sanders, and Jonathan they're really good. Ike Reese. And I just wanted to know what you think about the upcoming Eagles team with the addition of the tackle, was it Jordan Davis from
Georgia?
We got two good guys from Georgia.
Yeah, I mean, those are great players, Weave. I appreciate you taking a break from Eagles training camp to give us a ring. Thank you. Good afternoon. I hope you have a good afternoon. Trey is up next. Hey, Trey.
How you doing, my friend?
We're doing great. Thank you.
Hey, Paul, you were talking about announcers and color commentators on Friday, and we were talking about, or the show was talking about, how great the announcers of the past were. Don't you think that was, I think they were a lot more descriptive about what was going on during a game because most games were not on TV. So they had to make you feel like you were in the stadium watching the game. They talked about the atmosphere and the rain and going left to right and things of that sort. Don't you think that had a lot to do?
I think the television monitor really has ruined play-by-play because the great broadcasters told you what they saw with their eyes, not on a monitor to their right or left. And I think I know a lot of play-by-play guys tell me they don't look at the monitor, but it's impossible not to look at it.
I totally agree with you. And Paul, that one vote that Texas got, I can tell you where that vote came from, Paul. That come from Steve Sarkisian. You don't think he didn't vote for himself, Paul?
You know what? I forgot. That was the coaches poll. You're absolutely right. You nailed it.